Those fucking kids of yours.
I know.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to The Sweet Smell of Succession, a Succession recap podcast, the show that's streaming right now on HBO and HBO Max. I'm David Chen, the host of podcasts like The Filmcast and Culturally Relevant. And joining me, as always, she's the host of podcasts such as Again With This, Listen to Sassy, and Extra Hot Great, Tara Ariano. How are you doing today, Tara?
Hello, I'm fine, but I want to warn our listeners, there are people outside of my office doing something on the street with a drill, so if you hear interference, it's that. I apologize. I can't.
That's not
it.
Just Dave Chen's voice. It's it's the sound of an actual drill outside bearing down into the sidewalk.
Yes.
But welcome to the show. What we do here on this podcast, every week we recap each week's episode of Succession. We dive into our thoughts. We spoil everything. And then we run down winners and losers of the week, as well as our favorite quote of the week. You can find more episodes of this podcast at successionpodcast.com. You can also email us at successionpodcast@gmail.com. Now, because of the way we record the show, we don't always have a chance to address feedback about the show, but I did get a comment on my Patreon page at patreon.com/DaveChen. Thanks to all those people who do back me on Patreon and help to support, you know, indirectly me making shows like this. Christopher Yiman commented on Patreon in response to our recap of last week's episode. We were talking about Kendall Roy and like the weird breathing sounds he was making in the opening scene or one of the opening scenes of last week's episode. And we were speculating like whether or not he took drugs or not. Here's what Christopher Yiman had to say about it. He said, "The weird breathing thing that Kendall was doing is a yoga thing, hissing breath. You put your tongue on the roof of your mouth and blow the air over the voice box so it does this hissing noise. After a quick Google, I think the proper term is Sitkari Kumbhaka. I think it's just trying to portray that Kendall probably is not on drugs anymore, understands what he has to do, and is just breathing out his anxiety so he doesn't spaz out or do something crazy. Either that or to deflate the thrill of what he just did so he'd calm down and figure out what to do next," end quote.
Okay.
What do you think? Was he practicing meditation of some kind or yoga?
He may have been. Someone else said this on the Twitter, too, that they thought we thought the breathing noises was the sound of him doing drugs. That's not the case. I thought it was something like this. I didn't know that it had a name, but I figured it was some kind of meditative practice. But I would also say to Christopher, just because someone does yoga doesn't mean they don't also do drugs.
In fact, arguably, there's a big overlap between the people who do yoga and drugs. But
I think they're probably, I mean, maybe not so much cocaine, which we know is Kendall's drug of choice. But I think he could both think of himself as a wellness guru and also do cocaine like a Hoover.
Great point. But the question is, right, like, as of this moment, as we're recording this, we've only seen episode two. We don't know. I don't recall him doing drugs in this episode, right? So we don't
not
know.
Not that
if
we saw, right.
I don't know. We don't know yet if he is on drugs. So
true.
Do you have a guess? Like, I still think he is, personally, but I don't know if you have an opinion on it.
I mean, well, I guess we'll see if he's going to crash. But, it, you know, as I said last week, he could just be high on all of the attention.
It's true. All right. So, this week's episode, season three, episode two, Mass in Time of War is the name of the episode. And I wanted to ask you about overall thoughts on the episode. This, to me, felt like a bottle episode of Succession, like is one of the few kind of bottle episodes of Succession. I mean, for Succession, even a bottle episode is going to have multiple locations and, you know, a sprawling set of characters. But it felt way lower in scope than a typical Succession episode in terms of, like, you know, number of extras, number of locations, kind of there's not a gala or some dinner or some ball happening. Like, so to me, it felt like a bottle episode of Succession. What do you feel like that's a good interpretation as a television expert, Tara?
No, because to be a pedant, a bottle episode only takes place in one location and this one didn't.
Well,
so
I have failed you yet again.
But yeah. It definitely feels more contained, but I mean, we talked about this in the last episode too. I think a lot of that is that they're having to make sets smaller, scenes smaller, because they don't want to have too many people breathing each other's exhalations.
Yeah,
in the
yeah.
same space.
There was, yeah, and I think I don't remember if it happened in the time since we recorded last time, but like somebody tweeted out an image of J. Smith Cameron, who plays Jerry on the show, and alluded to the fact, I think I was following the woman who plays Carolina on Succession.
Yeah, Dagmara Demenchik.
Yes. And I think she tweeted out an image of J. Smith Cameron and it said, like, this was before the time when we could, like, hang out and give each other hugs or whatever. So, like, I feel like there was they shot at least part of the show when there were no vaccines, right?
Yes. Well, they were supposed to start in November.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yes, that would be correct.
So it's possible we're seeing some impact of that. But in any case, smaller scoped episode. And I enjoy seeing the Roy kids kind of bounce off each other. I think their dialogue is really crisp in general. And we don't really get to see them talk, frankly, for extended periods of time like we do in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
So I enjoy it on that level. I don't know that this episode particularly moved the plot along very much. You know, I felt like it was just kind of more table setting for what is to come. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. I felt like they could have cut some stuff out of this one and some stuff out of the premiere and like mashed them into one slightly longer than usual episode. This just felt like, a direct continuation of the last one.
Yeah. It felt like a little bit kind of plate spinning. But again, the dialogue is snappy enough that I still just kind of enjoy spending time with these characters, and I'm willing to do it even in this context.
Yeah.
But yeah, not too much in terms of a plot-driven episode. So all that said, Tara Ariano, why don't we dive into it? What happened this episode?
Sure. Let's start. We once again have a story in New York and a story in Sarajevo. And about that, we also got this comment on our Twitter that someone was saying Sarajevo's not in Croatia because we jumped around in the chronology in our recap of the premiere. So yes, we know Sarajevo's not in Croatia. What happens is in the very opening of the episode, they're leaving the boat, they're helicoptering in, they land in Croatia, and that's where they depart from. So some of the people that were on the boat go to New York, others go to Sarajevo from Croatia. So just to clarify, let's start with the European storyline. Logan does not have much to do except stew while his sneaky kids are sneaking around. So he decides now is the time to summon Marcia to come and see him. And he gets as close as he's probably able to apologizing for the business with Rhea. He says up top, I can't eat shit, and then will only admit to a tendency to get distracted. But that seems to be enough for Marcia to continue talking about maybe coming back. And while he chills out in another room, she lays out the financial terms she's going to need satisfied before she'll resume the public aspects of being Logan's wife. And then she's like, all right, get to it. She goes to sit with Logan while Hugo, Carolina on the phone, and Celeste, who is a woman that Marcia's brought with her. She may be her daughter, unclear. They hash out the specifics of how that's going to go. And so I double checked what I said last week. It is true. Marcia's last appearance before this was in Dundee, which was the 8th episode of season 2, where it's the big, you know, he announces that Rhea is going to take over for him. And I love the moments when we get just a tiny glimpse at the depths of intimacy between characters that the show doesn't really portray explicitly. And Marcia stroking Logan's lapel in the lobby after his non-apology for the affair tells us, I think, so much about this relationship. She never arrived there expecting a whole remorseful display from him. What she got was enough. And on some level, she probably not only respects his refusal to eat shit, it's probably part of what made her love him in the first place, whatever love may mean in this case.
A couple of thoughts on all this, right? One is that I'm finding the depictions that we've been getting of, like, to put it bluntly, how rich people love each other,
yeah,
like in popular culture, is just kind of interesting. You know, another example that we've seen of this is in the Bong Joon-ho movie Parasite. Like, it kind of reminded me of that. Do you see that movie Parasite?
Yeah, of course.
There's this moment when there's like a rich guy in the movie, and the character is asked like whether he loves his wife, or he's commenting on whether he loves his wife, and he kind of says yes, but like he starts laughing, and it basically, like, I'm sure there is some kind of affection there, but basically people of this strata, if we are to interpret these, you know, these shows as fact in any way or based on truth, right? People of this economic strata see emotions and relationships as intimately tied with economics and commerce, basically, like net worth and things of that nature.
We talked about this with The White Lotus, where you were so, I mean, spoilers for The White Lotus ahead. You were so disappointed at the end when Rachel went back to Shane, but it's like, yeah, of course, like there are certain trade-offs that you make when you decide to marry someone at this level when you're not also there. And even if you are, where, you know, you just make the calculation that it's worth it on balance.
Indeed. The thing that was a little bit confusing to me about this episode, Tara, is that my understanding of why Marcia left was not the affair, right? It mm-hmm. was that Marcia had been cut out of the conversations about who would ascend to power in the corporation.
Yeah.
But if you were to watch this episode, I don't know that that is fully conveyed, right? Like, if you were to watch this episode in isolation, it makes it seem like she was upset because he slept with this other woman, but I don't think that's the case.
I mean, I think that's part of it, but that's another element of their intimacy, right? That she thought he was having those conversations with someone that wasn't her. You know what I mean?
I guess that's true. But I guess for me, it felt like she was cool. She understood the affair because, you know, she had that thing. She had that speech that she gave to Shiv in season two about like how, like, I'm a big girl. I know how to handle the situation.
Yes.
But then when Logan actually went outside for, you know, her, his advice or his counsel or his decision making, like that's what really was over the line for her.
Yes.
So.
Well, she had that conversation with Rhea herself where she was like, you know, I hope you don't have STIs or whatever it was.
Exactly. Yeah. So I always appreciate it when the spouse checks with the mistress about the STIs. So those are just some of my thoughts on this. But what else is going on this episode?
Well, New York's hottest club is Rava's apartment. Stewie sends a Trojan horse to mess with Kendall. Shiv shows up shortly afterward and Kendall starts giving her his pitch. Kind of. Let's hear clip two.
You tell yourself you're a good person, but you're not a good person. Right now, I'm the real you.
What? Sure. You're the real me.
This was such an interesting way to put it because I think we've argued about Shiv and her motives and stuff on this podcast before, but how much do we think Kendall really buys this claim? Like, is it that he knows it's hard to argue with or about that he's like, I'm on the side of right, or does he actually believe that he is?
It's a really good question. I honestly don't know right now. You know, I don't know if in the universe of the show, Kendall really buys any of this bullshit that he's selling, or if he's just mad scrambling, flailing, which is what we've seen Kendall do for 98% of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I don't know. I don't know. And I hope we will find out more about his beliefs about right and wrong and where he officially stands in the family as the season goes on.
Yeah, so. I mean, I think we sort of get a hint at it when he's like, he's impatient and he's trying to shorthand it. Like we saw it in the first episode with Lisa where he's like, my dad's the devil, blah, blah, blah. And then he does it again in this one, too, where he's like, I love dad. I hate that. I'll leave it to my therapist to sort it out, where it's sort of like, all right. You know, there's the flowery way to tell these stories. And then there's the like, let's just get on with it, you know?
Yeah.
And do we think that Shiv even thinks she's a good person? Because especially over the course of season two, we saw that she's driven by her desire for power.
Yeah. I thought, you know, what I hope this season slash show provides us is some sense of how these people will actually rule, quote unquote, you know, like if Shiv is actually given power, which she basically has never had before,
mm-hmm.
like how will she actually behave?
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's really going to be the test. And to me, the biggest sort of scene that asks this question is in season two when she talks that woman down from testifying at Congress.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And one of the things I think is great about the show is you can interpret that scene in multiple ways. Either Shiv is an extremely cold, calculating person who's
that
saying exactly
is
the right
the
thing.
Truth. Go on.
Or maybe she actually legitimately does want to help this woman. You know, I think that is a valid interpretation of that scene. So now whether she'll get the opportunity to do that is an open question, but I don't know. I still think it's an open question personally. And maybe I'll feel differently about it being an open question later on this season.
Yeah. I mean, I think ultimately they're both bad people, right? We should just make sure that people know we know that.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Fair enough.
So then Connor and Roman show
up. Capable of good, Tara? Capable of good?
Not that we've seen. Truly, not that we have seen.
Mm.
I think.
That's probably right. I'm trying to think back. Well, okay. I would say the biggest act of compassion we have seen from anyone is Shiv getting Tom out of the spotlight at the end of season two. Like,
yeah.
That's like the nicest thing that she did for that guy.
Yes. But
or for anyone on the show, as far
right,
as I can tell.
True. Right? But I guess it's not her fault necessarily that means someone else that she supposedly cares about had to take it instead of Tom.
Right, 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 right.
But
at least she has some kind of ranking system, you know?
Right.
Anyway, it's a fair point that we're both struggling to come up with anything good that these people have done. So I will give you that. So
mm-hmm.
Anyway.
All right. So Connor and Roman show up separately. Kendall gives all of his siblings his big pitch, which is the four of them banding together to take Logan down. Let's hear clip three. Warning, it's a bit long, but I think it's all important.
So my thing is, if this shit was just epiphenomenal, maybe it could be written out. But these incidents are symptomatic of a foundational sickness within our father and his company.
Don't use that tongue prettier than a $20 whore.
Yeah, like, what's your point?
My point is the milk is going sour.
Well, that explains it.
You know, the great whites, from politics to culture, they're rolling off stage. It's our time.
Oh, you mean us? This multi-fucking-ethnic transgender alliance of 20-something dreamers we got right here?
Good. Big picture, we're at the end of the long American century. Our company is a declining empire inside a declining empire.
Amen, brother.
People are killing themselves with guns or dope so fast that we're losing pace.
Unsubscribe.
We're fat-fingered fucks and we can only live on cream. U.S. supremacy is waning. What I think is, within that context, we can become omninational and reposition. Because actually we are not tied, culturally or physically, so we are actually in a great position to leapfrog tech. Information is going to be more precious than water in the next 100. Combine all our news operations, become the global news information hub. Amazon is 20 years old, Gates is an old geezer. Detoxify our brand, and we can go supersonic. So what do you say? Are we interested?
So even as you hear it, you kind of know this pitch, even though it makes so much sense for the four kids to ally against Logan, that it's doomed as soon as Kendall says it requires him to be in charge after all the dust settles, because none of his siblings trust him. They never have. They probably shouldn't, because he is sneaky. But the point of the show is, I think, to show us that none of them is really fit to take over anything. Like earlier in conversation with Roman, Jerry had offhandedly said that a talking point she'll have to push whenever she's doing press as the interim CEO is that it takes six people to replace Logan. That seems to be literally true from what we've seen.
So I have a few thoughts on this that I want to talk about. Are you familiar with the website Aussie?
I am. Ariana? I mean, not as a reader, but yes, I've certainly heard the stories of its implosion.
So Aussie.com was a media website, and it's OZY.com. And it's basically like, you know, one of those sites that started up recently that like is a multimedia company startup. Fusion.com, like which doesn't exist anymore as far as I can tell, is like another example. You know, there's been all these like venture-backed media startups that have come up in recent days. And what was interesting about Aussie is, first of all, their name is based off of Ozymandias.
Yeah.
The Percy Bysshe Shelley poem. And it's hilarious. On the About Us section of the Aussie page, this is what they say about their mission. They say, quote, "We were founded on the belief that more is possible and the determination to question assumptions about how the world operates and what lies ahead. And we built those convictions into our name, which comes from Ozymandias. The poem is commonly read as a warning against outsized egos and the impermanence of power, but we choose to read it differently.
Mm.
To us, it's a call to think big while remaining humble.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so in the time since the company's founding, they have gotten in trouble for a lot of reasons. One of many of which is that, like, and Ben Smith of the New York Times broke a story about how during a phone call with, I think it was Goldman Sachs, that Goldman Sachs was wondering, like, how is Ozzy's video business doing? And they wanted to talk to someone on YouTube, was there to speak to the to how well Ozzy was doing on YouTube. But the guy from YouTube was like, you know what? I can't get the Zoom link working. Can we do this on conference call instead? So they switched to conference call, and he's like, yeah, YouTube. We're YouTube, and Ozzy's doing amazing. Turns out that someone from Ozzy was impersonating the guy from YouTube, which is a very,
whoopsies.
It's actually illegal what that person did. And
yeah,
the deal never went through, so it's unlikely there'll be like a lawsuit or anything like that. But that's one of many sketchy things they did. Another sketchy thing they did, they would like buy an ad in like the Los Angeles Times that's like, Ozzy is amazing, right? And then they will then advertise somewhere else and put an LA Times quote that says Ozzy is amazing. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, they'll put the quote in the advertisement and then attribute it to LA Times, even though it was from the advertisement.
Sure.
And like a bunch of like sketchy things like that. And the line from all of this, I've been reading this Ozzy saga with much interest. One of the lines was that one of the characters, the people from Ozzy, I think it was Carlos Williams, I believe. Carlos Watson.
Yep.
Said that, kept telling people that he wanted to be Ozzy to be Uber for media. The Uber for media. But when people asked him what this meant, he didn't seem to be able to explain what that meant.
Yeah, a toxic brand people only talk about when they're mad at it. What's a brand that loses money famously?
I mean, at least that's an ethos, Tara. Like,
I guess.
He didn't even understand what it meant at a basic level. I'm reading from a Defector piece. He says, another staffer told me that these kinds of buzzwords were part of Watson's regular vocabulary, phrases that would never quite make sense. Carlos would digest the Harvard Business Review and diarrhea it out, he says. And that is literally what I thought of when Kendall was talking about it. Like, he's like, we got to leapfrog tech. What the fuck does that mean?
Yeah.
What does that mean to leapfrog tech, Tara? Can you explain this to me?
I mean, to Kendall, I think it means we're going to retrench our traditional media business and really focus on TV. But it's like, that's not the play in 2021 or whatever year it's supposed to be in the world of the show. Like,
it was I think that everything that Kendall said in this episode was digesting the Harvard Business Review and diarrheaing it out, basically. There was nothing that I could sense that was close to a coherent thought that made much sense.
At least in my opinion.
Maybe someone else who is a stronger business expert than I listened to this and was like, yes, this is the vision, you know? But not me, sir. Not me, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, the difference between, other than, you know, his word salad of what he's saying about it, the difference between Waystar and Ozzy is that Ozzy is pretty clearly, you know, a grift, whereas at least Waystar, like, it makes movies, it has theme parks, it has a TV network that, you know, psychos watch, but still it exists.
Yeah, well, so Ozzy exists as well, you know. They made YouTube shows that have millions of views. Sure, they paid for most of those millions of views,
yeah,
but, you know, there's a website with stories on it, you know.
Yes.
So
yes. Sure, okay, it exists, but it doesn't have an audience.
It exists much less, to a much smaller degree than Waystar Roku exists. I agree with you there.
Yes, yeah. So. And you know, the only thing we've ever really seen Kendall be passionate about in a business context other than his own advancement is that he thought Valter was great and he sold it out. So, like, Kendall doesn't believe in anything. All of this makes no sense, and his siblings know that.
Indeed. So
this is also the conversation where Shiv makes a rude remark about Roman, clip 4.
Whatever. Defend Dad all you want, but Jerry can look after herself.
Yeah, I know that. I'm not defending Jerry.
You can't
I'm
hide under the covers with Mommy.
Oh, fuck off, Siobhan.
Oh, you love showing your pee-pee to everyone, but someday, you know, you're actually gonna have to fuck something.
Fuck you.
Rome.
Bitch. What? Leave it.
Rome.
What?
Just Rome.
So, he stomps out. Connor goes after him. Shiv asks Kendall, was that too harsh? Like, Kendall is the barometer.
And maybe Kendall, who I turn to for all of my EQ questions.
Right? Yeah. And he said, no, he's fine. He's probably jerking off into my ex-wife's panties, which, like, nice. But to both of everyone involved in that sentence, by the way. But yeah, so I had forgotten that Roman's confusing sexual deal was known to his siblings, but David reminded me.
Well, yeah. So in season 2, episode 5, Roman's girlfriend at the time brings up that they don't have sex.
Right.
Which, by the way, like, amazing episode, all-timer. Season 2, episode 5, the Turnhaven episode.
It's very good.
But that scene was just full of excruciating cringe from beginning to end, mm-hmm. the dinner.
Yes.
Like, every single shot in that scene was like, there's going to be some cringe here, which is really amazing. And, you know, in reflecting back on it, it's definitely brought up at Turnhaven, but it feels like their knowledge of Roman's sexual proclivities goes deeper than what was just brought up at the dinner.
Yes,
listening to
I
that
agree.
Clip again. Yeah. So they probably know that he's kind of different in some way when it comes to that. And it's kind of, so to speak, below the belt for Shiv to pull that out. But I love the fact that these kids never show any weakness to each other, you know, as evidenced when Roman returns, right?
Right. They never grow or learn. And anything that they know about each other is just known so that it can be weaponized, basically. So, yes, when Roman returns, claiming he was just going to the bathroom, definitely not hurt, Kendall shifts to the kids' responsibility as Logan's children and being associated with the company to confirm the worst stories that have come out during the scandal and apologize as the fresh new generation that's going to do things differently. And Roman and Shiv both say they don't know what was happening. And Kendall and Connor are like, okay, but yes, you knew. And... this turns into another argument, and it reminded me of the follow-on stories after the Harvey Weinstein scandal broke, where journalists or bloggers would, like, find examples of people, quote, joking about how gross Weinstein was, how he sexually intimidated people, and that there was clearly a level on which it was common knowledge, but that no one did anything about it because no one could or felt that they could. And, like, in this case, what was Shiv supposed to do about her dad's, you know, perv buddies making her feel uncomfortable and probably being even more disgusting to people who were far less protected than she was as a teen or an adult? Like, you can almost say her choice to work outside the company was her strong stance against its abuses, except for how desperately we've seen her trying to get into the company since the first season.
What? So I agree with you about, like, this being a strong sense. Was she really trying to get into the company in season one, though?
No, I'm saying since season one.
Since season, so yeah, in seasons 2 and 3. Yeah, I agree. I do think it is quite a bit of a turnaround. Like, you know, I feel like season one was really about the show finding its footing, and season two is when the show really set these characters on their path. Because looking at some of the scenes in season one, they feel almost out of character. The biggest example being there's this scene when Logan basically threatens Shiv. Do you remember mm-hmm. that at the end of season one? Yeah. And then when you juxtapose that with, like, season two premiere, it doesn't really fit, in my opinion. Like, it feels like they were still figuring out, like, what Shiv's role was going to be in this whole thing, in my opinion. Maybe not. Maybe it was clear from the outset. But I guess I feel like, yeah, Shiv was... The showrunners were trying to figure out who Shiv was in her relationship. And really, season two is when it's like she's trying to vie for power. But... yeah, I think it's a great point that, like, that her going outside the company could be seen as an act of strength. And to me, it reminded me of, like, you know, you said the Harvey Weinstein thing, but, like, I guess my mind went to also, like, people like Quentin Tarantino, right? Or or other people who've worked with Weinstein, you know, and, like, what, not necessarily journalists or bloggers, but people who've worked with him and, like, them kind of considering their culpability, given the facts that have come out. So, anyway. So I think there's more action in this episode when it comes to an old friend, right?
Yes. So Kendall exits this conversation. He gets a text and then he says, I'm going to go hug his kids, which is a lie. We have not seen Rava in this episode at all. I'm pretty sure she didn't go to bed with all these maniacs in her home. I assume she went to a hotel, but you disagree.
Yeah, I think her house is just very big and she kind of went upstairs and we're not seeing her because of budgetary reasons. But I think in my head canon, Rava is still upstairs in her apartment.
See, I mean, I'm sure the place is definitely big. It's like even just the downstairs that we see is giant. There are like four different living room type areas.
Yeah.
But even so, I think if she were there, she would be like, okay, everyone get the fuck out. It's like 3 a.m. But who knows?
I think there's like a probably some dynamic where, like, you know, my guess is that the apartment is paid for partially by Kendall's money, you know? And so maybe she would feel bad about that, is my guess. But I agree with you. That's the thing that she should do.
Well, I'm sure it was bought with Kendall's money, but I doubt she's making mortgage payments. I'm sure she owns it outright. Anyway.
Perhaps. Anyway. Yes.
With regard to the kids, I assume they were
I'm just going to say, Tara, if we see her coming down the stairs next episode, I'm going to claim victory on the next recap, okay?
I don't think we are, because we're already in the next day in this episode.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
we see
right.
Kendall at the lawyer's office, so we'll never know.
Oh, my
Sound off in the comments where you think Rava is.
Where was Rava this episode? That's the question. Okay, you're right. So, good call.
Back to the kids. I assumed they were away at camp since they never came home that we saw. Kendall and the other siblings are having this conversation in his daughter Sophie's room, which she is definitely not sleeping in. And it was summer when the whole rest of the family was on the yacht. But, you know, the thing that you don't know about New York kids of the wealthy is they go to camp for the summer, like for 8 weeks to sleepaway camp. So that's where I assumed they were. Anyway, Kendall's self-involved siblings wouldn't know where their niece and nephew are, so it's a pretty good cover story for where Kendall's actually going, which is to meet Stewie and Sandy Furness's daughter, whose name is also Sandy with an I. She's played by Hope Davis. And it seems like Kendall convinces this crew to back him in the proxy battle to fuck over Logan. And I'm going to just admit it. I'm sure I said this last year, too. The proxy battle is the part of the show I understand slash care about the least.
First of all, thank you for clearing up that the Sandy's daughter was also named Sandy with an I. That was very confusing. I don't know why they did that.
I think I do, but we can come back to that. Go ahead.
Yeah. I love the Kendall-Stewie relationship. I think it has been one of the most interesting relationships, particularly like one of my favorite moments is season 2, episode 1 when Stewie, I think he says something along the lines of, you know, there's like a friend card you can play. Like there's a human being standing in front of you, something like that. It was very moving.
Yes.
About like, you can just tell me what happened.
Yes.
So to me, but given all that, to me, I am kind of curious, like why is Stewie interested in trusting them again? And maybe the fact that Kendall lit up Logan on national television is the thing that he's willing to kind of put his money where his mouth is in that sense. Maybe that's why they're willing to trust him again. What do you
think? Yeah. I buy that. I also, just to make sure that people don't think I'm anti characters having sex, I definitely ship Kendall and Stewie. they should kiss, in my opinion. Yeah, I did think it was funny that Sandy's daughter had the same name he did and that Larry Pine, who plays Sandy with a Y, was only on the phone. And I wonder if he didn't want to be on set, you know, in COVID times, or if he had health issues. A similar thing happened with the last season of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, where Hitchcock was only like on an iPad.
Mm. Yeah, it's interesting. We're kind of seeing the, you know, COVID filming realities potentially reflected on screen there.
Yeah.
I am curious what role Hope Davis is going to play this season. You know, I am excited that she's in the show, and I really love her as an actress.
Yes.
One of my favorite performances of hers, honestly. Like, when you think of Hope Davis, what's the role that comes to mind for you? I'm just curious.
I'll go first.
It's Synecdoche, New York.
Oh, I've never
seen
that.
She plays a psychiatrist or therapist in that movie that's, like, very destabilizing to the reality of what's happening in that movie. Anyway, go ahead.
American Splendor, I guess. She plays the wife in that, right?
Yeah, she's so good in that.
Yeah.
Yes. So
yeah, she's
awesome. We'll see what role she has to play. And I'm excited.
So my theory about why they have the same name is, another show that I watch is The First Wives Club, an adaptation of the movie on BET+. And in season 2, which came out like 3 years or something after they filmed the first one of the actors got another job and they couldn't have her in it. It's like the movie. It's just basically like, you know, these three women hang out all the time. And so because the one was gone, they sent the character to another city where she never interacts with anyone at all. And then back in New York, where the action all takes place, they're like, and now we have this new friend and she's also a lawyer and blah, blah, blah. Like, she clearly... this new character is fulfilling the exact function of the original character.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and very clumsily, by the way, made me kind of have to quit watching the show, which I really liked in the first season. But I wonder if this is why Sandy and Sandy have the same name, where it's like Sandy, Lady Sandy is just doing all of the same things as Man Sandy. We wrote all these scenes for Sandy with a Y, but he's just going to be on the phone, and now Sandy is doing all the Sandy stuff.
You know what would be funny is if it was like obvious that they actually filmed the scenes referring to a person named Sandy.
Yes.
And then they had to like sub in the Hope Davis character for this.
Yes.
But I don't think that's the case, because you see, you know, Kendall interacting with Sandy with a Y in this episode, or which one? Sandy with a I this episode. So it's not like they actually had to like go in, like cut out a character like they did in like, you know, Army of the Dead or something.
Right.
I mean?
No. Yeah. I just mean like they rewrote the scenes where it's like, okay, Sandy's just going to be on the phone, and now the person who's actually breaking Kendall's balls in person is this other character.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Indeed.
We can't know. Kendall is on top of the world when he goes back up to Rava's place, but Logan has sent intimidating donuts, and Connor decides he's out on Kendall's offer. And Roman, who has talked to Jerry while Kendall was gone, is also going to stick with Logan. Shiv had obviously seen the potential of backing Kendall. She clearly was leaning Kendall's way, but she just as obviously does not want to be the only one on Kendall's side, so she also leaves. And Kendall yells insults at her as she leaves. And I lost track of whether Logan knew where anyone was at this point, so I assumed the donuts came from Jerry after Roman called her, and that she just put Logan's names on them to freak everyone out.
I don't know. I feel like he acknowledged the existence of the donuts at the end of the episode, if I recall correctly, when they're in the car.
Did he? Maybe.
I think
oh,
he
she
like
brings
says,
them up, and then, yeah. But
right, yeah. Mm. Mm. Schrodinger's donuts.
Right.
Who is truly responsible for them? And what was the purpose of them? Right?
Right.
Because basically it's like, I think we're meant to interpret them as some kind of power move, right? Like,
well, it's him saying, I know you're all together.
I know you're all
no
there.
No one's told me that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So what else happens this episode, Tara?
Well, so then we get to the denouement. So after Roman calls in to say that he's got Shiv with him, Logan decides he's going to go back to New York. And right before this happens, Marcia makes a reference to things Logan could say to make Kendall back off. But Logan says there are some bombs that when you drop them, burn you too. So once again, Kendall's manslaughter
has been brought
up. That's
basically exactly what you said on last week's episode, Dara. So mm-hmm. Nice to know.
Yep. But the fact that it's been brought up twice in two episodes, I mean, obliquely in the first one, just makes me think that it's actually going to be a thing.
Chekhov's secret about vehicular manslaughter, basically.
So then we also get, upon Logan's return, there's a lot of choreography at the private airstrip where he drops. Roman is waiting on the tarmac, and there's like a fake, you know, jokey punch and then a hug. And all the paparazzi are there, you know, shooting the whole thing. Then Jerry's there. She holds out her hand to shake. Logan blows right past her. Rude. And so she has to do this like, and away you go, sort of wave to cover for it, but very smooth. Probably not the first time he's done something rude like that to her. And then Shiv remains in the car, so she's photographed on the site, but she doesn't come out and hug Logan the way Roman did. And Marcia doesn't come out of the plane with Logan, so presumably negotiations about her compensation for returning are ongoing. That was my interpretation.
Yeah, curious about the big time of Jerry. I'm wondering what was behind that, and I think what we're meant to believe is that Jerry is going to be torched, you know, mm-hmm. like based on what Logan says in the vehicle. Like,
yes.
And so maybe this was him kind of giving her the shaft at the airport is a way to foreshadow for outside observers that this is what's going to happen. Maybe?
Yeah.
Like he's already he was showing he's not happy with her. And then eventually he's going to be really unhappy with her. That's kind of maybe mm-hmm. where that's going. So.
Right. Or it's not even that he's happy or unhappy with her. It's just like she's as little a person to him as any of the other underlings that work for him.
Perhaps. But it just felt very cold given that she's the new CEO, you know?
Right.
But, yeah.
Yeah. You would think just for appearance's sake.
Yes.
Unless
there's a purpose for it, in my opinion.
Right. Unless it's like, well, I'm bowing out and I'm not happy that she's taken over, but I accept it, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
One last thing, Greg. he figures out when he's still at Rava's that A, Kendall will sell him out if he needs to, and B, any lawyer that Waystar hires for him will actually be Waystar's lawyer. So he convinces Ewan, his grandfather, to pay for a lawyer for Greg, and ends up with Theo, played by Peter Riegert, who's an old lefty who's going to ride Greg into a critique of the whole system, et cetera, et cetera. Greg clearly knows this is bad, but he's not paying, so he can't really say anything.
Yeah, this felt to me like Greg, you know, getting stuck in a really challenging situation that is going to be difficult to disentangle himself from, right? And I thought all the stuff with Greg was very funny this episode, especially with a law student, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think she's like starting her first year.
She said she's in her first semester.
Yeah. So that stuff I just thought was just hilarious. And, you know, when she's like, should I text my law professor, you know, about like what's actually happening? I just thought that was incredible. So,
well, yeah, I mean, he's like, what should I do? Should I take this lawyer they offered me? And she's not getting good grades if the first thing she tells him isn't do not accept any representation from a lawyer you don't choose, because a lawyer represents whoever is paying them. I'm not a lawyer, and even I know that from watching television. Like, get your snap, friend.
Well, I don't know if I agree with you here, just because I think their objective, a lawyer's objective for Waystar, would be to keep Waystar out of trouble, agreed, primarily. But that would entail typically keeping the client out, like the person out of trouble as well.
Mm.
It is with Ewan's lawyer that is really like, clearly Ewan has an extra, he's trying to take down Waystar through this lawyer arrangement, basically.
Yes.
Right? So that is clearly going to threaten Waystar and potentially imperil Greg as well. So I think if I'm to vote for who Greg should take as a lawyer, it would actually be the Waystar lawyer. Me personally.
Oh God, though. Absolutely not. No, they're going to set, he's going to be Waystar's blood sacrifice. They would only be fake representing him to find out what he knows.
I don't know about, I just don't know if
sound
that's
off in the comments.
I just don't know if how that's how that works, you know, based on my experience with corporate lawyers. Like they generally don't want anyone in the company because it looks bad for them if anyone in the company gets in trouble. But anyway, whatever the case, we can agree that the way that the lawyer approached him was pretty sketchy, you know?
Yeah.
I will grant you that. It didn't seem like it was above the level. So,
well, anyway. And he's very careful not, I mean, to yeah. say where he's come from so that he also has plausible deniability. Like, he knows exactly what he's doing. Jerry has sent this guy to say, find out what Greg knows, because she knows that he was with Kendall.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not saying that the lawyer Ewan picks out has Greg's interests in mind either. I'm saying the meta story about Greg is when you're, adjacent to power but don't actually have it, you're gonna get fucked.
fair enough,
right? Like,
I think that's true, and I think that we're gonna see that play out with Jerry potentially this season, you know.
Yeah,
I'm very curious what is gonna happen with Jerry,
right? So, but the difference is Jerry has her own money, Greg doesn't have money, so he's vulnerable.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, all he has to fall back on if he has to leave Waystar, which presumably he's going to have to because of, you know, aligning himself with Kendall, is he's just to throw himself on Ewan's mercy. And as we've seen, he's very capricious with it.
Agreed. Greg, definitely not in a great situation this episode. So
no.
So how does the episode end, Tara?
Yes, the last shot is Logan and Shiv in the car together, smiling about his plan to make her a president of something or other at the company so that she can go in and be his eyes and ears and, like, use Jerry as a human shield, basically.
Yeah. So is this going to happen? Do we think he's actually telling the truth this time?
Right. This is exactly what happened in season 2.
Yeah. Like,
should she believe it this time? Who knows?
I feel like it's going to happen. That's what I feel like is like, I feel like they have to change up the dynamic somehow. So he's actually going to make good to some degree this time, is my guess.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
Do you ever think about like what Shiv was doing with her days between the time when she got kicked out of Gil Evis's car, like, and just didn't have a job?
Showing up at the office, being an interloper regularly.
Yeah. Every day though. I bet she didn't go every day.
Maybe she recorded a podcast or made some TikToks, you know? Anyway.
I feel like once you don't have a job and you're still fine, you should be like, why do I want any of this?
So true. So true. All right. Before we get to winners and losers, Tara, let's do some weekly plugs for our stuff. Generally, we just try to mention if you enjoy our banter from this podcast, you may enjoy some of our other podcasts. And I just want to give a shout out to my other podcasts, The Filmcast at thefilmcast.com, and also Culturally Relevant at culturallyrelevantshow.com, where I interview actors, directors, and writers. Check out those podcasts if you're looking for more of my work. How about you, Tara, if people want to find more of your stuff?
Well, this week I'm going to be on This Had Oscar Buzz with our friends Chris File and Joe Reed talking about the movie Never Let Me Go. You can find This Had Oscar Buzz on all of your podcast platforms. I am also recapping every episode of Succession this season at Decider.com. So you can find me there. And then my other podcasts are Again With This, which is about Melrose Place. Listen to Sassy about the very important Sassy magazine of the late 80s and early 90s, and Extra Hot Great, a general TV podcast. This week, we'll be talking about the Netflix show Inside Job with our friend John Ramos.
All right. And yeah, definitely check out Tara's recaps of Succession, the written recaps as well. Tara knows that I think that she's one of the most talented recappers in the business.
Dave.
So it really is a pleasure to be able to work with her. And you know, she is one of the people that basically created the form, guys. Okay. She's one of the people that pioneered the form of television recapping. You have a chance to read her thoughts in Succession.
Don't
check
say
them out
that. That sets up expectations too high.
No, I'm okay with it. I'm okay with it. All right. Let's talk about winners and losers for this week. So I got a comment last week that people didn't know what this segment was. So let me re-explain, right? Every week we identify a winner from the Roy family and a loser from the Roy family, as well as a winner from outside the Roy family and a loser from outside the Roy family. Basically, a character that ended up getting damaged in some way or, you know, that ended up like gaining more power or losing power, that ended up winning some battle, losing some battle, or damaging someone or getting damaged themselves. Basically, that's what our very vague definition of winners and losers are. Let's talk about winning Roy this week. Tara Ariano, you're winning Roy.
Logan Roy.
I agree.
Kids on his side.
Yep.
Against their own interest, probably.
Marsha's probably going to be back at his side soon. You know, like he's got everything. Everything's coming up Logan Roy. At this point,
he landed in the States and wasn't immediately arrested. Things are going well.
That was a little weird. I thought, like, he's like, I'm coming back, but like, I guess, was it the knowledge that the kids are going to back him? And he's like, therefore, he feels he can probably surmount any legal challenges. You know, like, it wasn't clear to me why he felt like I'm no longer in legal jeopardy and therefore can go back. Do you know?
I guess he felt like if there were going to be charges, they would have happened by now.
Maybe. Yeah. Mm. I don't know. But whatever the case, he felt safe enough to go back. So
he did.
Losing Roy. Who's your losing Roy, Tara?
Well, Kendall, because he couldn't convince any of his siblings to join him against their crooked dad.
Yeah. And you see Kendall in very sad, dejected mode what's her name? Lisa's office?
At Lisa's office. Oh, yes. Yeah. In his sad incognito outfit. His little tiny peanut head and that giant baseball cap.
Stealth Kendall. Stealth Kendall. Yeah. That's a sad version of Kendall. It's not a happy version of Kendall.
No.
So definitely not doing well. Okay. Winning non-Roy for you.
I'm going to give it to the proxy battle crew, Sandy and Stewie, because I think that they see, whether they know yet that Kendall got fucked over by his siblings, this is going to put them in a good position, which is basically what Jerry tells Roman. Like, if Kendall aligns with them, Sandy, either one, is going to find a way to screw Kendall over. And I think that's probably true.
I did not list them as winning non-Roy because I feel like anyone getting in bed with Kendall is going to get screwed over somehow.
But that's my point. I don't think that they are ultimately going to be in bed with Kendall. They're going to see this weakness once they find out about the siblings as like another way to get one over in the battle.
Fair enough. Well, my winning non-Roy was Marsha's lawyer.
Yeah.
And I will explain more during my quote of the week. But winning non-Roy, Marsha's lawyer, losing non-Roy for you.
Hugo, who has to negotiate with Marsha's lawyer, Celeste.
Amazing moment when Hugo's like, hey, Carolina, do you want to take it from here? And she's like, nope, you got this. You got this. That's cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So love that. Okay, here's my losing non-Roy. This is a very obscure character, Tara. We don't even see this person on screen or learn their name.
Yeah, we don't.
But my losing non-Roy of the week is Connor Roy's wine storage contractor. Because during a phone conversation in this episode, we see Connor say the following line. Quote, I was assured that yours is the best facility for the storage of fine wines, but now I'm looking at a geological survey and it's worrying me, end quote. That is an amazing quote, you know, because yeah. It's obviously one of the most douchebaggy things you could possibly say, but it's like, it's not over the top douchebag. It's just the right amount to be believable, in my opinion, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like, you're an asshole, da, da, da. You know, it's like, he clearly just wants amazing customer service and he demands it.
It's also like, at this point, probably 2 a.m. in New York. And if he's looking at a geological survey, perhaps his facility is in California.
Yes, it's a Napa Valley one. So they stay open till midnight there. So.
Just in case someone has a wine emergency and needs to access their
wine emergency,
their storage. Right. But also, like, he's doing this, he's calling them in the middle of this, Kendall trying to get them all on side. So he's like, yeah. But first I got to call my wine guy.
Indeed. Mm. Okay. So, those are our winners and losers of the week. Quote of the week for you, Tara, and why?
Well, after Hugo tells Marcia, you know, officially the company's position is that Rhea and Logan never actually slept together, Marcia's reply is, she's a whore, and it's not my problem if she wouldn't finish him.
Pretty cold.
Yeah.
Pretty cold. Amazing line.
And yet, though, I feel like she would say it to Rhea's face, too.
Indeed. It reminds me of like Robin Wright's character in House of Cards, you know, mm-hmm. like in the earlier seasons when she was just like cold, calculating, you know, no emotion and really just assessing the pros and cons of a situation without any emotion there. Mm-hmm. So amazing line, amazing delivery. My quote of the week comes shortly after that. When Marcia's lawyer is meeting with Hugo and says, quote, the numbers I'm going to propose will sound like very, very large numbers, which, period, the end, already an amazing quote. Then she says, but if you consider them in terms of the difficulties it would present Mr. Roy to have an acrimonious divorce announced ahead of a contested shareholder meeting, then they start to seem like very reasonable numbers, end quote. And that's why Marcia's lawyer wins this week. That's going to be, if she's getting, you know, 10% of that, she's going to take home a nice big chunk of change there.
Yep.
So, but I just like, it's like, these are going to sound like very, very, very large numbers. My wife, went ballistic. She's like, this is one of my favorite scenes of all time in anything ever. 'Cause that is the amount of power that she would like to command.
Yeah.
So good stuff. Well, I think that's going to bring us to the end of our recap of this week's episode of Succession. Any other thoughts that you didn't mention, or shall we bring this to an end?
No, we did it.
We did it. I thought, decent episode, but I'm much more curious about what is going to happen in the next episode. So, all right, folks, that's it. Thanks for listening to The Sweet Smell of Succession. Thank you, Tara, for chatting with me about it.
Thank you.
It's always a blast. We'll see you next week.